So we're holding on Ian Dowd on the day's second line from bottom. Where's that? Ian Dowd on the day's second line from the bottom. Continuing going through the Malacha. The Mishnah had said, Hakadeya Amanat Litzkar, that if a person rips with the intention of re-sewing it, then that's Malacha. So the question is, as usual, we know for something to be a Malacha, it has to have been done in the Mishkan. Kriya the Mishkan Mihava. Where did they have in the Mishkan where they ripped cloth or stitches or what have you? So Rabbi, the Reb Zera, the Amit Havaya, so Rabbi and Reb Zera both say, you have like this, Shekhen Yuriya Shnufabod Dauna. If you have one of the curtains in the Mishkan, if a worm or a moth or whatever made a hole in it, ate a hole in it, coated above a tofu, so they would rip it and then re-sew it. Meaning like this, in other words, if you have a round hole on a piece of cloth and you try to sew it, then you're going to have, it's going to get wrinkled. You're not going to be able to sew it. You're not going to be able to sew it in a way that comes out smooth. So what do? So you rip some of the cloth on both sides of the hole. Now instead of a round hole, you have a long skinny hole, and that you can sew up in a way that's much less visible. So they're ripping for the sake of stitching. Now, of course, in that kind of situation, of course, they'd actually be doing a lot more than two stitches. And we said in the Mishnah, Kareya Manas Lifbo Shtei Tviris, where you're ripping in order to sew two stitches. But the fact remains, Tosfos says, once we have the two stitches is the minimum for Malacha, because we said yesterday that's the minimum amount that will hold. Then therefore, already when we're saying Kareya, we're going to say two stitches as well, even though the actual way that they did ripping in the Mishkan involved more than two stitches. Okay. So in this connection, speaking of sewing, Amar Rav Zutra Bar Chuvya Amar Rav, three dinim that Rav Zutra Bar Chuvya learned in the name of Rav, he learned all these three dinim together, and therefore he mentioned them together, even though on the surface two of them don't have to do anything with what we were talking about. But number one, Hamaseach Chot Shal Tzvira B'Shabbos, Chayav Chasas. Number one, if a person stretches out the sewing thread on Shabbos, then he's chayav chasas. Meaning, Rashi explains, let's say you have two pieces of cloth that are sewn together. Sometimes, you know how it is with clothing, sometimes these stitches start coming loose and the two parts of the garment the seam of the garment starts coming apart. You pull on the end of the thread in order to tighten them back together. So sort of Zutra Bar Chuvya wants us to know that would be also daraisa, that would be part of the malacha of toser, of sewing, in order to and therefore he'd be chayav chasa. So that's number one. Number two, v'haloymed davar echad min ha-mogush. Number two, if somebody learns even one thing from a mogush, and we're going to see soon in the Gemara what a mogush is, but one explanation that we're going to see in the Gemara, which is what Rashi uses over here, is a min who's likely to lead a person towards Avodah Zarah. So you're not even allowed to learn anything from him, not even a matter of Torah. So somebody who does that, chayav nisa. And number three, v'ayadeh l'chashet kufas amazolos v'ayin echoshev. Number three, if somebody knows how to calculate kufas and mazolos, the kufas, the various times when the seasons begin, and mazolos, when each of the mazolos rises, and where the various planets are located at any given time, somebody who knows how to calculate that and does not actually do that, also a sapra heimenu, you're not allowed to say divrei Torah over in his name, or some of the mafarshim explain that it means you're not even allowed to have a conversation with him for reasons that we're going to talk about soon. The first one about pulling on the thread is fairly obvious, so the Gemara doesn't need to expand on that. But the other two we need to explain, so we're going to do that. So first of all, magushta. So when we have a magushta or amgusha or whatever, so Rashi explains, it's not just here. In many places in Shas, we have in many places in Shas, we have the word amgusha mentioned. We just had it right now. Mogush and Ambusha is the same thing. Although Tosfos brings an explanation from the Aruch that they're actually arguing about one specific place in Shas. We have the Gemara mentions literally the word Ambusha means a magician. It comes from the same root as the English word magician. But what does it mean exactly? The Tosfos mentions an explanation from the Aruch that it's referring to something that it says in the Gemara in Moed Katan that Pare was an Ambushi. So when it says that, we know it says that Pare used to go out to the Nile and early in the morning, and therefore by a couple of the Makas, Hashem tells Moshe to go meet Pare over there by the water. Hina Yosam Maima. So the Gemara says over there, why was he going out over there? So then you have two different possibilities. One is that he was going in order to do magic, in order to do black magic. And the other is that he was going in order to pretend that he was in order to keep up the fiction that he's a god and that he doesn't have to go to the bathroom and therefore he's going early in the morning, which is the explanation that more of us are familiar with. So therefore, so according to that, then the Gemara over here was arguing on that particular point. But Tosfos says more like what Rashi says, that we're just talking anywhere in Shas where it mentions Ambusha or Mogush, what is the definition of that? When we're saying over here, you're not allowed to learn something, even something in Torah from him, what kind of posting are we talking about? So Rav and Shmuel argue what the meaning of it is. Chad Amar Charshi, one of them says it means a magician, somebody who performs black magic, which is also Minat Torah for Jews, and there's actually an opinion in the Gemara and Sanhedrin that it's also for Goyim as well. Chad Amar Gadufi, and the other one says it means somebody who blasphemes, who worships Avodah Zarah, and who not only worships Avodah Zarah, but is very addicted to it. So it actually says, Minha Oduk Avodah Zarah. He's a very religious guy. He's very, very sincere about his Avodah Zarah. Umagadif Tamarit Hashem, so he's always cursing and blaspheming Hashem, or Mesis Anashim Avodah Zarah, and trying to convince people to go worship his Avodah Zarah. So according to that second opinion, that's the Magushta, the Mogush that we're talking about, you're not allowed to learn Torah from. So we said Rav and Shmuel said, so which one is which? Which one did Rav say? Which one did Shmuel say? So it was Gistayim the Rav to Amar Gadufi. You can prove that Rav is the one who gave the definition that a Mogush, that an Ambusha, is the one who worships Avodah Zarah and tries to get other people into it. Because the Amar Rav Zutra Vatrovya Amar Rav, Alomid Davar Achad, Minam Mogush Chayiv Nisa. We just said that if somebody learns something from a Mogush, then he's Chayiv Nisa. So it has to be that we're talking about a Min, because the Isakadat Chorshi, if you're going to say it means a magician, then why would you not be allowed to learn anything from him? After all, Hoksiv Lo Silma Blasos, the Pasuk that's true says that you're not allowed to learn magic in order to do it, because to do any of these forms of magic would be Osir. Avalach Lomid Lahavin Lahoris, but you are allowed to learn their procedures of magic in order to learn it and in order to teach it to others, in order to understand it and in order to teach it. Meaning Rashi says, for example, let's say if you see a Navi Sheker doing these things, you'll recognize that he is in fact a Navi Sheker. You're not going to be wowed by what he accomplishes and think that he's a Navi Emes. A few other explanations. Rashi on the Pasuk mentions that you'll learn what they do, and you'll realize how bad and how corrupt they are, and teach your children, don't do such and such, because this is what the Goyim do. Another thing of it is also we know the Sanhedrin had to be experts in the various kinds of magic because if somebody is brought before them on a charge of that they perform one or another of these types of magic, and some of them are chayev, some of them are an Issur Malkus, some of them are an Issus, some of them like Oven Yudonion, an Issus Skila, so they need to be familiar with the procedures so they know to be able to judge and be able to say whether the person actually did it. So we see that you are allowed to learn these things in the Pashkas. If you're going to learn, for example, you need to learn, let's say, for example, how is Uri's magic done? Who are you going to learn it from, the Pashkas? You're going to learn it from somebody who actually practices it. So therefore, Rav Zutra Batrovia couldn't be telling us in the name of Rav that you're not allowed to learn anything from a magician because that would contradict that. So it has to be, if he's saying you're not allowed to learn anything from a mogush, it must be that in his definition, a mogush is not a magician, but rather the min who worships Avodah Zarah and tries to get other people into it. Okay, the Gemara says, Tisayin, yeah, you can actually prove that's what it is, that Rav would hold that mogush means a min and you're not allowed to learn Torah from him. There is an interesting thing that I came across not so long ago, where this book that Rav Chaim Goin one time sent one of his Talmudim to a local Christian bishop to discuss with him about the meaning of a certain pasuk in Tehillim, and the meaning of a certain word in a pasuk in Tehillim, whatever, because you know, after all, I mean, they have their Greek translations and whatever, and then the Talmud was very surprised about that, and then Rav Chaim explained to him that's mutter. So I guess either Rav Chaim Goin held like Shmuel, and either he held like Shmuel and Al Gemara over here, that you're not allowed to learn from a magician, but you are allowed to learn from a min, or he held that maybe this bishop, in general, we say for certain purposes in halacha, we say that these guys are not necessarily so into their religion anymore, to the extent that they're going to try to that they're always going to try to talk you into it. So maybe Rav Chaim Goin knew this guy and knew that he's not of that type, and therefore you're allowed. I don't know. We do know in general, for example, the Rebbe was always very against these kinds of, they had, and it was very popular in the 60s, for example. They would set up interfaith dialogues where you'd have on the stage, you'd have as in the jokes, a priest, a minister, and a rabbi would get up on stage, and they'd be talking about the similarities versus the differences in their religions and what we can accomplish together. And the Rebbe was in general not very much in favor of these kinds of things, not very much in favor of having dialogues with them about the truth or the falsity of their religion. It's known that the Rebbe gave permission for Emmanuel Shachat, Alav HaShalom, to do such things, but not for other people. Okay. Anyway. Okay, now the third one. We said about Kofres and Mazalos. So in this connection, Omer of Shimon ben Tazi, Omer of Shimon Levi, Mishum bar Kapara, Kola Yadeh L'chashev B'tkufas Mazolos, V'enei Choshev, if somebody knows how to calculate Tkufas Mazolos, and he does not calculate them, all of Akotav Omer, about such a person, the Pasuk says, that Poyel Hashem lo yabitu umaseh yodav lo yiro. They didn't look at the work of, they didn't gaze at the work of Hashem, and they didn't see the works of his hands. So what does that mean? It means like this. So when we know from a number of places, for example, in Tehillim, we have in Tafet Oches, you have the expression, Ti'era Shemecha Maaseh Esrei Secha, that when we see the heavens, we see what Hashem accomplished over there, and we say at the end of the Tafet Hashem Adenenu Mo Adu Shimcha B'chol Ha'aretz, how glorious is your name in the whole world. So when you understand how these kinds of things work, when you understand the incredible chokhmah that Hashem put into how the stars and the planets and whatever move, then it brings you to a greater appreciation of Elikus. It also reminds you that anybody who worships them is just being silly because they don't have any independent powers of their own. It may also relate to something that the Alter Rebbe talks about in Tanya. That's the same way as if you were to walk into a royal court where you've never been before, and you see a bunch of people bowing to one person, then automatically you realize that person is the king, and you realize that derech eretz for him. And the same way, when you look at the sun and the moon and the stars and everything, you realize how they all set towards the west, implying, like the Gemara mentions elsewhere, like they're bowing towards the west because that's the place of the Shekhinah, then you realize the tremendous bittul that they have towards Hashem, and therefore that brings you that people all of aim of a fachad, as the Alter Rebbe says with it. You'll have a tremendous respect and a tremendous awe for Hashem, seeing that even these great tremendous beings have awe and respect and bow down to Hashem. So if you know how to calculate these things and you don't, then like you're ignoring the greatness that Hashem put into the world. There's other explanations also. One interesting one being that when you calculate kufas and mazolos, that also affects things it gives you an idea of what the weather is going to be like, which is, you know, even now it's hard to forecast it with any kind of accuracy. And therefore, so if you delve into these things and understand them, then you'll be able to calculate, you'll be able to predict that with greater accuracy. And that, as the Gemara is going to say, that brings respect for Jews in the eyes of the goy. So Omer of Shmuel ben Nachmani, Omer of Yechanan. or of Yonasan, really, it's supposed to be, Minayin Shem Mitzvah La'adim L'chashat Tzkofas HaMazolos. But how do we know, Tachta, that a person has a mitzvah to calculate Tzkofas HaMazolos, if they're able to? Shenemo, Shmartim Vastitzem, as the Pasuk says, you should guard them and you should do them. Kihi, meaning the Torah, Kihi Chochmasam Ovinasam La'enei Ha'amin, because it is your understand, it is your wisdom and your understanding in the eyes of the nations. The Ezo Chochmo Vina, Shehi La'enei Ha'amin, what kind of Chochmo Vina do the Jewish people have that is noticeable and understandable, even by the Goyim, would be the Hevei Omer, the Chishuv Tzkufas HaMazolos. So this means the calculation of Tzkufas HaMazolos. So again, this is what Rashi says over here, that because when you're able to calculate these things, you're able to say, for example, you're able to predict that this year is going to be rainier than usual or hotter than usual, and that because it, that kind of thing depends. That kind of thing depends on the position of the sun and the position of the mazolos and whatever, and therefore that makes the goyim have greater respect for the Jews when they see that they're able to calculate such things. The Rambam says more generally that it means the whole learning of astronomy. There's a short shuvah of the Rambam to somebody named Rabbeinu Ephraim, who asked about this, what does this mean? And the Rambam tells him basically it shows the importance of learning astronomy and other such things. Part of that is also the matter of how to calculate the calendar that we use nowadays, which is made very precisely and in a way that impresses even the goyim with the precision of it. There was actually in the 1700s, 1800s, you had a famous mathematician named Gauss, actually, who, among the many things he did, he sat down and wrote a detailed formula. He was very impressed by the precision of our calendar, of the Jewish calendar, and he sat down and wrote a mathematical formula how to be able to calculate the secular date for any Jewish date. A great mathematician like him was impressed by our calendar. So this is an example of what the Gemara is saying about that. It's Chochmas Kum Avinas Kum La'inayam. The Rambam actually mentions in the principles in Sefer HaMitzvot, the Rambam goes through the 14 principles, how we know whether something is one of the 613 mitzvot or not. He mentions that he actually had some people who listed the 613 mitzvot before him who thought to include this as one of the 613. The Rambam says, no, come on, it's not one of the 613 mitzvot. So the Gemara says over here, it's a mitzvah to do it. It doesn't literally mean it's a mitzvah. It just means it's a good thing to do.
Okay.
There is one more thing worth mentioning in that connection. Before we go on, there is a sicha where the Rebbe once talked about the idea that yes, there is the concept. We learn these things, and many times we learn them. We learn astronomy from books of the Goyim, because as the Rambam points out in Hilchos Kiddush HaChodesh, there were Jewish books on that topic. For example, from the members of Shevet Yisachar who were members of the Sanhedrin. But we don't have those books anymore. So of necessity, we have to learn it from the books of the Goyim. The same thing is true as far as medicine and a lot of other things. We have to rely on what the doctors say, which of course is very relevant nowadays. But Eber talks about Nesicha. That's really not the ideal way to do it. The ideal way would be that we learn all when shonim ketikunam, when things are the way they should be, then we actually learn all these things from within the Torah itself. Stakel baraita bar alma. So you have the ideal is, for example, it shouldn't have to be that you go to a doctor to ask him what do we do, you know, what are we able to do now as far as minyanim, let's say, or not. The proper way really should be that you're able to look into the Torah itself and be able to see from that what the correct thing should be in any given case. But because we don't have people of that caliber now, so therefore of necessity, we have to resort to the goyish wisdoms that you find in medical books and in astronomical books and whatnot. Okay. Onward. The Mishnah had said, Hatsod Tzvi. The Mishnah had mentioned that a person traps a deer is av malacha seder of trapping. And not necessarily a deer. Obviously, it means any kind of animal. The details of the dinim of trapping we're actually going to talk about later on in the 13th perek of the Masechta. But now we're only up to the 7th perek. But meanwhile, we're going to go into one particular din involving trapping. Turn it up, Bonan. Hatsod chilozen. If a person traps a chilozen, which of course they did for the purpose of making the blue dye, the tchelas dye in the Mishkan,
vapoisei, and then he squeezes it in order to get the blood out. He's only chayev one chatas. He's not chayev for the malacha. He's not chayev for the psia. For the psia literally means wounding, but in many places in the Gemara, it means like squeezing something to extract something from it. So it means over here, he squeezes the creature to get out the blood. So the Tanakama is saying that he's not chayev for that. He's only chayev for the trapping. Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a chayev shtayim. Rabbi Yehuda says he's actually chayev two chatas. Shahayir, Rabbi Yehuda, I'm a psia b'chlal disha. Because Rabbi Yehuda says that squeezing of a creature like that is part of the malacha of dosh. Just like dosh, you have the kernels of wheat that are inside the straw and the shells and whatever, and you have to break those open with the threshing process in order to get out the kernel. The same thing over here, you're breaking open or squeezing open the creature in order to get out of the blood. So therefore, that would be a malacha of dosh as well. Omrulai, the Chacham answered him, no. In tzia, the chlal disha, no, they say that tzia is not included in the malacha of disha. Omar Rava, my time of the Rabbanan. So why did the Rabbanan say that not? Because Kasadri ain disha elu gedulei karka. They hold that the concept of dosh only applies to things that grow from the ground. So the chalazin. The chalazin is some kind of creature that lives in the sea. We know in the last 130 years or so, there have been a number of different opinions have been put forth what creature is the chalazin exactly. And, you know, you have nowadays people rear various one or another kinds of chalas, made from any of three or four different type creatures that have been identified as it. But whatever it is, it's definitely some kind of thing that lives in the sea. So it doesn't grow from the ground. There are some Rishonim who learn that maybe land animals would be considered gedulei karka, because after all they live off grass which grows from the ground, but fish definitely wouldn't be. So therefore, so the Chacham would say that dosh does not apply to them. Dosh only applies to things that grow from the ground. So the question is, but the chayev nami b'shem netilas neshama. Okay, but why aren't you chayev also on the grounds that you're taking away the creature's life when you're squeezing out the blood? Then when you're squeezing out the blood of the chalazin, you're killing it. Now Tosfos points out you're not going to be chayev for taking it out of the water, because it can live for a certain amount of time out of the water. Tosfos mentions that what Tosfos says over here is that when you take a chalazin out of the water, apparently what it is it thrashes around and flops around and whatever, and therefore that makes it die faster. So therefore you can't say really that by taking it out of the water you killed it, because it itself in effect is killing itself by thrashing and flapping around over there. In any case, So just taking it out of the water wouldn't be netilas neshama necessarily. Also, the Ritva says another thing. What you often do is you don't take it out of the water by itself. You take it out in a cup full of water, and then you keep it alive like when you have a goldfish in a bowl or something. You put it in a bowl until you're ready to do the plexia. So therefore, you can't say that just taking it out is already killing it. Because you took it out in a container of water. But when you plexia, when you squeeze it, then you're definitely taking out its life, because then you're squeezing out the blood. So why are you not chayav for that? Rabbi Yechonon says, you're right. You have to be talking about the creature was already dead, and then you squeezed out the blood. So obviously, there's not any netilas neshama. Rava says, you don't even have to say that. You could even say, we're talking about you squeezed it while it was still alive. The reason you're not chayev for killing it, misasiku esel netilas neshama, because relative to the killing of it, you're considered misasik. Meaning, we learned the other day about the concept of misasik, where you're doing one activity, and by mistake, you do a different one. So, okay, we're not really, Tosfos says, we're not really using misasik in its true sense. I mean, even if he was misasik, when it comes to wounding or killing, you don't say the real concept of misasik, that you meant to do something else, and you do this, and it's not counted. But so the point is, in other words, he doesn't actually intend to kill. It's not Dover Shane Miskaven, and we learned before that according to Rav Shimon, that's Mutter. So therefore, according to Rav Shimon, therefore there's no Chiyuv for killing the creature, even though in the end, by squeezing out the blood, that is what you're accomplishing because you didn't intend to do that. So the question is, why did that work? Don't Abaya and Rava both say that you are chayev for sick ratio? If it's something that you do something and inevitably something else is going to be done as a result of it, then for sure you're chayev. A psik ratio of the lo yamos literally means cut off its head and you won't die. The classic case of it is, imagine you have somebody, for example, that says, I want to cut off the head of this chicken I want my kid to be able to have the head to play with, like a ball. I didn't mean to kill the chicken by that, but why should I be chayev for shoychet? But no, you don't say that, obviously, because you move it to the head, inevitably the creature dies. So that's psik ratio. So it's psik ratio that if you squeeze the chilazin, it's going to die. So even Rav Shimon wouldn't allow it. So why is it okay? The answer is the Gemara says shiny chacha. It's different in this case because it's not considered a psik ratio in this, because you're actually trying to keep the creature alive as long as possible. Because the kama de ispe neshama tfei michalei, the more the creature is alive while you're getting out the blood from it to make the tchelas die, the better off you are. Ki heichid yulitzel tzidei, this way the dye will be clearer and will have a stronger color. So you're actually trying to keep the chilazer alive as long as possible. And therefore, so relative to the fact, so maybe you end up killing it, that at that point you can be considered misasik. That is, it's davar she'ein miskaven, because you actually weren't intending to kill the animal. You were intending to squeeze as much blood out and still keep it alive. So now Rashi learns over here that when you chayev for psik resha is where you don't care. In the case of the chicken's head, for example, you cut off the chicken's head, you don't actually care whether the chicken stays alive or not. But over here, it's called psik resha, delo nichole, it's called, there is a psik resha, but you didn't want it to happen. You preferred the creature to stay alive as long as possible. Tosfos actually asks on Rashi that not necessarily is that valid. So they say that it's a different matter. What it is, the Gemara over here is actually trying to work it not just according to Rav Shimon, but also according to Rav Yehuda. Rav Yehuda is mechayev for malacha she'ena tzricha legufa. So according to him, you ought to be chayev for the killing of the animal, even though you didn't want it to happen. And the only reason that you're chayev is because the kalko, because you're ruining the situation, because you wanted the animal to stay alive in order to make the extraction, the dye, go better. And now when you're actually killing it, then you're makalko, and Rav Yehuda agrees that makalko is potter when it comes to malacha. So that's how Tosfos learns it. So b'chlal, this whole question of psik resha b'lo nichale is a machlokes rishonim about whether it's allowed or not. Again, when you're doing something where something else is going to happen inevitably as a result of it, but you actually didn't want that second result to happen, as opposed to that you don't care one way or the other, is such a thing allowed or not? You have a machlokes rishonim on that topic. Okay. Anyway, the point is that's why. So again, so he's chayev according to the chachamim only for having trapped the animal. He's not chayev for squeezing out the blood. It's not part of the malacha of dosh, because according to the Chachamim, dosh only applies to things that grow from the ground. He's not chayev for killing it, because we're saying, according to Rabbi Yochanan, because anyway he did it while the creature was dead, and according to Rava, because he actually doesn't want it to die, he wants it to stay alive. And then, according to Rabbi Yehuda, he's chayev in addition for dosh, because Rabbi Yehuda holds that dosh does apply to things that don't grow from the ground either, but he agrees that he's not chayev for killing the for netilas neshama, for killing the animal. Okay, the halacha actually is like Rabbi Yehuda, that dosh does apply to that. Well, the halacha is that dosh doesn't exclusively apply to things that grow from the ground, but again, the question can be whether animals are considered to grow from the ground.
again, which you could take the view, you could take the view that they do because they eat grass. So, for example, part of the malacha of dosh would be milking a cow, would be under the malacha of dosh. So Jewish farmers who have cows, and the cow needs to be milked on Shabbos in order, because otherwise the milk builds up in the udder and then it causes pain to the animal. So they have various possibilities what they have to do. They have to either nowadays they usually milk with machines anyway, so you attach the machine before Shabbos and put it on a timer. If you don't do that, then what you do is you milk a cow into a bucket that has soap or something in order that the milk is not, you're not going to actually use the milk, and you're only doing it in order to prevent the sad of the animals. Yeah, various things in that connection. The Rashash points out an interesting question. He says, so if you're telling me everything that's a malacha we learn from the Mishkan. Well, by the Mishkan itself, we're saying they had to squeeze the blood out of the chalazim. So what do you mean, Rabbi Yehuda is saying? The Chachamim are saying rather that dosh only applies to gedolei karka. Very nice. Okay, but there should be a separate malacha of peseah because they did that with the chalazim. So again, the Avnei Nezer, and then the sefer here that I mentioned called Eglay Tal, where he goes systematically through all the 39 malachas and then deals with all the details of them. And so it's like a detailed Shulchan Aruch on the 39 malachas. So he explains the vote would be, suppose that you only do one chilazin. So then there's not a matter of burr. And he learns basically that dosh is sort of like a prerequisite for burr. When are you chayav for dosh? When you're going to be doing burr with it. So over here, you're not doing the dosh over here, the squeezing out of the blood. You're not doing it for the sake of burr, because there's no burr to do, because you only have one chivazin. Therefore, he says that's why we would say it's not considered a separate ad malacha. Okay. But again, with that said, there is a tolda of dosh. Again, the halacha is that there is a tolda of dosh called mefarik when you're extracting something from its natural container, for example, milk from a cow or juice from a fruit or whatever, and you have dinim about those when you're allowed and when you're not allowed to do it. Okay. Onward. The next thing we said in the Mishnah was ashoistei. We said a person shechts an animal, then he's chayav chatas. That's one of the 39 malachas. He's chayav chatas for it. But the question is, shechet b'shamay mechayev. What exactly are the grounds that he's chayev for shechita? Meaning, Rashi explains the question, where do we find, when they were making the Mishkan, where they had to shecht animals? You're going to say, very simple. They needed the skins, the oris elam ma'adamim and the oris choshim for the roof of the Mishkan. And those are skins that come from animals. But Rashi says, okay, very nice, but they didn't actually have to shecht the animal per se. They could have killed it some other way. They could have strangled it, and then the skins would have been just as usable. So the question is, where we see exactly that shechit, that the actual shechita is a malach. In other words, basically, why did the Mishnah not use the word netilas neshama or something? Tosfos actually says that Tosfos says differently. That no, obviously, we're in the Mishnah, in terms of the Mishnah, in terms of the Avos that they did in the Mishkan, obviously they did Shechita. So the question isn't why we need to mention Shechita. The question is, in general, when a person shechts an animal, on what grounds do we say that he did a malacha? On what grounds did he do a malacha? What exactly is the malacha that he accomplished by that? Part of the question is also because again, a malacha, in order for it to be a malacha, it has to be a constructive thing. And shechting or killing an animal is not constructive; it's destructive. You're killing the animal. So what exactly is the chiyuv? So Rav Omer Mishum Tzeveya. Rav says when you shecht an animal, it causes that the neck of the animal gets dyed red with the blood. And we're going to see on other days what Rav is going to say, why that's considered significant. Who cares that it gets red with the blood? But Rav says that's chayev on that ground. So in other words, according to Rashi's explanation, we're saying they didn't actually have to shecht animals in the Mishkan, but they did have to do dyeing. And therefore, so and they did have to dye the cloth and whatever. And therefore, shechting is considered an av malacha because it relates to that also because you're accomplishing dyeing over there. Shmuel says it's a matter that you're taking away the animal's life. But the fact of the matter is, again, okay, you're going to say that they didn't have to shecht the animals for the Mishkan, granted, but they did have to kill them somehow or other. So therefore, any way of taking away the life of the animal is considered part of that malacha. So shoychet is one example of that. So he'd be chayav for that. Now, when it came to the chilazin, again, we just said before that Rabbi Yochanan would say that when you're squeezing the chilazin, there's no netilas neshama because the chilazin is already dead. And then according to Rava, we said that not necessarily, we said the animal was alive, and we said that we would have been chai if it weren't for the fact that it was psik resha de la nichale or makalkal or whatever. Okay. So the question is, when Rav says that you're chayev because it's seveya, what does that mean? Mishum seveya ein mishum natilas nisham aloi. So what is Rav saying is only chayev because it's seveya? That's a malacha of its own. We had earlier in the Mishnah, when we went through the malachas that have to do with making cloth, we had the malacha of seveya, of dyeing thread over there, and then that was the malacha. So why are we repeating it over here in the case of shoshet? You're right. Rav doesn't mean that when a person shechts an animal, he's chayev only for tzedeya. It means that Rav is saying he's chayev actually on two grounds. He's chayev for netilas neshama, so he agrees with Shmuel on that. But he's saying also the reason why the Mishnah uses the word shechet is to teach us that actually if a person shechts an animal, he's actually chayev two chatois. One for shechet, one for netilas neshama, that he took away the animal's life, and one for dying, because he caused the neck of the animal to get dyed with the blood. So why is it important that he died it? Omer Rav, Milsa de Amri, this that I just said, that a person is chayev when he shechts for dyeing the neck, Ema b'milsa, I want to explain something about it. I want to explain what I said. Deloy resu dori basroi v'lech kolai. I don't want that in future generations people are going to come and laugh at me and say, Tevea b'ma'e, and then say, what is Tevea? What are you accomplishing? Why is Tevea considered any kind of accomplishment when he's shechting that you should be mechayiv him for that? So Rav says, let me explain myself. Tevea b'ma'e nichale. Why would the person want the neck to get dyed when he's shechting the animal? The answer is nicha de litvas beis ha-shchita dama. He davka wants that beis ha-shchita, the area that he shechts on the neck, is going to get colored and dyed with blood. Ki heche de lachzua inchi. This way people will see it, the lace of Lisbon and Rene, and they'll come and buy from him. Meaning, in other words, Rashi says that when people see that the neck is full of blood, then they'll realize that it was shechted today, it's fresh meat, and therefore they're going to be more eager to buy it. Whereas when you don't have that, then they're going to think, okay, it was shechted yesterday or 2 days ago or whatever, and it's not as fresh, and they're not going to want to buy it. Rabbi Hanan also has a different explanation that they're going to see. Kosher that it was shechted properly. Alfi Alacha, they're not going to think that it was stabbed or electrocuted or whatever else they do in order to kill animals that way. So therefore, in other words, so his seveya, he's actually accomplishing something positive, namely that he makes it that now people are going to be more interested in buying it. Now you do have a matter like this. You have in Shulchan Aruch talked about that there ain't seveya ba'ochlin. The halacha is that when it comes to food, you're allowed to color them on Shabbos. So, for example, you have, let's say, one example, actually, is when you're making tea on Shabbos, obviously the water gets colored, and you're able to do that. So you're able to do that. Similarly, for example, let's say you get bread into juice or something, so you're allowed to do that. So in that case over here, what are we talking about? That you're making the beit hashchita wet and red with the blood. So there's a couple of possibilities. One of them is that you would be actually there's three major possibilities. One is that Rav would actually argue and say, with that concept and say that there is tzviya ba'ochlin. which in that case, then the halacha wouldn't be like that. Another possibility is that Rav is not talking about the flesh of the animal, which is food, but rather the skin, which is not food. And there definitely is a malacha of dyeing the skin. So therefore, that would apply. And a third explanation, some of the Acharonim say, is that maybe you're allowed to do seveya with food where you're not doing it for a particular purpose. Let's say you're dipping bread into juice, let's say, or you're making tea or whatever. It's not like you particularly need the change in color. It happens by itself, and you don't really care about it one way or the other. But here you're doing it, or rather say you're doing it for an actual purpose where you're intending to sell the meat, and you figure you're gonna get a better price and you're gonna get more buyers because of that. So therefore, maybe you would be chayav for seveya even with food. Which in that case would apply to, you have, let's say, for example, sometimes you have certain kinds of fruits and vegetables nowadays. They dye them in order that they look more appealing. So therefore, according to that way of looking at it, you might actually be chayav for that on Shabbos, even though they're foods, because you're doing them tactical for the purpose of making them look more appealing and nicer. Okay. Next. The Mishnah had said, "V'hamocha v'hamavdoi." We said the next two malachas are salting a skin of an animal and tanning it. So the Gemara asked, "Why do you need both of them? Hainu meleah, hainu ma'abid. Aren't they both in effect the same thing?" You have. We're going to learn in the next parak, Be'ez Hashem, that there are three stages of the tanning process. The first one of them involves using salt, and then there's two other ones involving flour and involving gall nuts. So why are you counting them as separate malachas? So Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokish, Dami Chavayu, so Rav Yechon and Rav Shlokish both say, you're right. Afik chad minayhu v'ayol sutut. You have to delete one or the other of those from the Mishnah, and instead you have to put in the malacha of sutut, which means drawing lines, which means, Rashi describes, when you have a piece of leather, you're going to want to be making something out of it. So you draw lines on it ahead of time. You score lines on it in order to know where to cut it. And then afterwards you cut it along those lines. And the same thing, obviously, in the Mishkan, when they used the skins for the roof of the Mishkan, the same thing, they had to first mark where they're going to cut them and then actually cut them. So that would be a separate malacha. The Rambam actually understands Masarchek as more like the sutras that we have in the Sefer Torah, where you score lines on the parchment in order to be able to write neatly. It's not really a practical machlokes. And halacha, both of those would be usur under the grounds of Masarchek. So yes, that is considered a separate admalacha. Okay. Going on now to this matter of salting. And again, this is one of those things that we're going to deal with in more detail later on in the Masechta, in the 14th parak. But right now, we're just going to deal with one brief thing about it. Amar Rabba Bar Rabbuna, Hai Man De Molach Bistra. If a person salts meat on Shabbos, Chayev Mishum Ma'abed, then he's Chayev for the Malacha of Ma'abed, because he's making the meat more ready to eat, and therefore it's similar to salting the skin and making it and starting the process of making it into leather. Rava says no. In ibud ba'ichlin, the concept of ibud does not apply to food. Now, to a certain extent, Midrabanan it does, and Tosafos refers to that we're going to learn about those dinim in the 14th parak about when exactly you are and aren't allowed to salt food. But for right now, Rava is saying that just putting salt on meat is not going to be a malacha. Amar Rav Ashi, so Rav Ashi says, let's clarify. Rava Bar Rav Huna loy Amar elav kabori loy laurcha. Even Rabbi Bar Rav Huna is not talking about the kind of salt when you take the salt shaker and put a little salt on your meat to give it more of a flavor. Rabbi Bar Rav Huna even he is only talking about where you're salting the meat with a lot of salt where you're going to be taking it on a trip, where in other words you're making like beef jerky out of it. So then you salt it very heavily in order to preserve it. So that's when Rav Bar Rav Huna is saying that degree of salting would be like ma'abed and you'd be chayav for it. And Rav is saying even that now. Ava lebeisa, but if you're just talking about he's salting it in order to eat at home, le'vashabi inish mechle eight, the person doesn't make his food into wood. He doesn't make it so hard. So in other words, he's not going to put, when you put a lot of salt on meat, it makes it very hard, like beef jerky.
a person is going to do that only when he's going to be traveling on the road, and he needs food that will travel well. It's not going to spoil, so then of necessity he does that, even though it's going to end up very hard. But at home, he doesn't do that. You never salt your food that much at home. Therefore, even Rav Barahona would agree that the amount of salt you put on food at home would be mutter, and there's no malacha in it.
Okay.
Anyway, again, the halacha is like Rava, that in Ibud Ba'ochlin, but again, you have certain cases in halacha where you do have Ibud Ba'ochlin, and we'll learn about those later in the Masechta, that's the same.
Okay.
Then we said the next two malachas in the Mishnah are smoothing out the leather and cutting it to size. So let's talk about those. Amar of Achaba Chanina, Hashof Ben Hamudim B'Shabbos. If a person smooths out between the pillars on Shabbos, Chayev Mishum Mamachis, and he's Chayev on the grounds of Mamachis. So what do we mean smoothing out between the pillars? So Rashi explains, you have, let's say, pillars that hold up a porch or something like that. So you have a pillar and then a space and another pillar and another space. So if a person rubs the dirt between those pillars in order to smooth them out, then he would be chayev for the malacha of mamach. Okay, Tosfos doesn't like that explanation. And Rishonim explained the reason why not. Other Rishonim explained the reason why not is because we already learned before. We learned earlier in connection with the malacha of Chorish that if you smooth out a bump or a hole or whatever in the ground, then you chayev for the malacha of Boine if it was in the house, or Chorish if it was in the field. So what is so? So there's no mamachek involved over here. So therefore, because of that, the Tosfos brings from Rabbeinu Chanan and many other Rishonim bring from Rabbeinu Chanan that what we mean is like this. You'd have pillars over there. Part of the process of when you're working with a skin of an animal to turn it into leather, you put it on some of those pillars, or you stretch it out between pillars or whatever, and you smooth it out. And you rub it in order to smooth it out. So therefore, so we're saying that would be the malacha of that's what it is. It's smoothing out the skin and softening it. So that's what it is. There's an answer that Achronim give. You know, the Korban Nisano gives an answer. He says, first of all, according to that explanation. First of all, according to that explanation, you also have to ask the question, what do you mean is chayv mishum mamachek? That is the malacha of mamachek. Mishum mamachek implies that you would have thought he's being potter, but nevertheless, no, it's still part of the malacha. So the Korban Nisano explains that the Mishnah is talking about, when the Mishnah mentioned mamachek, means you're rubbing the skin in order to get the hair off. Here we're talking about you're rubbing the skin itself in order to smooth it. So therefore, you wouldn't have realized it's the same thing, and therefore, Rav Acha bar Chanina tells us it's the same thing. As far as Rashi, he explains that you could say when there's an actual hole in the ground, then you chaye for boina, or then you chaye for boina or chorish, as the case may be, by smoothing it out. He was talking about there's no actual hole in the ground. The ground itself is relatively smooth, and you're smoothing it out further. And Rashi would say you chaye on the grounds of a machet.
Okay.
Amar b'chir ba'aba, gimel dvarim sochli rav ashi, rav ashi, really it's supposed to be, mishmeid rav yeshur ben levi. And b'chir ba'aba says that rav ashi told me three dinim in connection with Shabbos in the name of Rabbi Shurban Levi. Number one, Hamagara Roshe Kloinsis B'Shabbos Chayiv Mishum B'Chavdech. If a person cuts and smooths off the end of a pole on Shabbos, Chayiv Mishum B'Chavdech, and he's Chayiv for the Malacha of B'Chavdech because he's cutting it to the exact, he wants to cut it to the exact size, and then to make it smooth on top. Number two, Hamamareach Litzia B'Shabbos Chayiv Mishum Mamachek. If a person smooths out a dressing on a wound on Shabbos, then he's Chayiv for Mamachek, for smoothing out, because that's what he's doing. The same way as you're smoothing out Same way as you're smoothing out a skin to make leather. And the same way over here, you're smoothing out this ointment or whatever that was part of the dressing, and therefore it'd be chayav. This is relevant, as we talked about it briefly earlier in the Masechta, as far as the matter of putting on ointments on Shabbos. You have an issue with that of actually smearing it onto the skin. You may be able to just put some of the ointment, squeeze some of the ointment out of the tube or whatever, and just put it on the skin, but you can't rub it in. And when we're talking about when it's a thick ointment, we talked about earlier in the Masechta, for example, about applying oil or other things like that have a thin consistency, that there's no problem with. So over here you have a dressing, which is soft, and you smooth it out on Shabbos, so that would be Mamachet. And number three, Ramos Pachet, it's the Evan the Shabbos, Chai Mishamachel Pachet. Number three, if a person is Mesates, a stone on Shabbos, and we'll explain in a second, what Mesates is, then he's Chai from Machel Pachet. So Mesates, Rashi explains like this. You have a stone is quarried out of the mountain or wherever it is that you got the stone out of. Afterwards, you smooth off the sides of it using a chisel or whatever. So that would be the malacha of makav patish because you're making the stone ready for its final use. Tosfos gives a different explanation. The Tosfos also explains in that case why wouldn't you be chayav for mechatech and mamachet. So Tosfos says you're talking about the stone is already basically squared off and is already ready. You're polishing it, kind of. Tosfos says what we mean over here by mechatech is not like Rashi says. Where you're just smoothing it, Tosfos says that it means where you're carving designs, you're carving designs or patterns or whatever on the stone, that would be makel patish. So another thing of makel patish, Amr of Yehuda, Haiman de Shokel Akufi Miglimi, if a person takes off things, little things that stick out of a garment, Akufi, Rashi explains, you have, for example, sometimes you have on a sheet or something like that, you have ends of threads that stick out, for example. So let's say, for example, during the weaving, we talked about yesterday that you could have a case where while you're weaving a cloth, one of the chassis threads, let's say, rips, and so that you tie the two ends of it back together and continue. So then you have at the end, and then in the final garment, therefore, you're going to end up with the ends of the thread sticking out over there. So that would be one kind, that would be akufi. Another example, Rashi explains, is you might have, while you were weaving the cloth, you're going back and forth over there with the erev, back and forth through the shesi, sometimes you have little rocks, little pieces of little chips of wood or whatever, accidentally get sewn in, or actually get woven in over there, and later on you have to remove them. So all those things, if a person removes them from cloth, chayim, from makel patish, then he's chayim, from makel patish, because that makes the cloth finally usable. The Gemara says, v'hani milah t'kapud alayu. Now that would only apply if he's actually mafkid on those ends of the thread sticking out, or those little splinters of wood or whatever being in the cloth. If he's mafkid on them, then he'd be chayim. The Rambam gives a different explanation of it also, that it means, you know, how sometimes you have, after you've worn clothing for a while, you have it peels up in various places. You have little round balls that develop on the clothing where you had bits of lint or whatever from the clothing, come off and then form balls on the clothing. So the Rambam explains that would also be what we're including over here under Makel Patish. So if you mask it on it, then it would be makel patish. In Chokhanaruch it says if he's not masked on them, he's just standing asik ba'almi, just playing around with his clothes, and then he removes them, then it would be also only medrab on them. Next, we said in the mission of our coast of Shteilos, yes, we said if a person writes two letters on Shabbos is a malacha. Now we said also there's a malacha of moichet, of erasing. So let's expand on that. Turn it up on. Cost of ois achat gdola. If a person writes one big letter, v'yesh b'mekayim lichtev shtayim, and there was room enough there to write two smaller letters, potter, then he's potter because he only wrote one letter.
Because the whole point was in the Mishkan, we said, why? Where do they write letters? So we said when we were learning the Mishnah that they had to write letters on the Kroshim in order to know which Keresh goes where. So each time they're writing two letters. They're writing, let's say, an Aleph on one. They're writing, let's say, an Aleph on the left side of one Keresh and an Aleph on the right side of the other Keresh in order to be able to match them up. So therefore, two letters is the minimum. So if you only write one letter, then it's Potter. But if you erase one large letter, the yesh b'makayim alich d'shayim, and there would have been room enough to write two smaller letters over there, chayev, then you chayev. Because the whole point of mochik is you're doing it for the sake of writing. And over here, you're accomplishing that now you have the room to write, now you're doing it for the sake of that, now you have the room to write two letters over there. So therefore you'd be chayev. Okay, the Ran points out. I mean, you could always say, you know, no matter how small you write a letter, you could always write something smaller. So he says we're talking about two of the same letter in the same size writing. So let's say, for example, you have, you know, sometimes you have in a Sefer Torah stretched out letters. Let's say you have like a vase or a dalet or something that's stretched out. So if, let's say, for example, you were to erase a large that's stretched out days like that, and there's room in that space to write two regular days, then that would be when the person is chayav. So even though he only erased one letter, but there's room over there to write two. So the Menachem Rav Yossi says, you see from this, there's a chumra in erasing compared to writing. Now, what is that telling us? Rashi says, the point is, the Gemara wants us to realize that braisa that we just quoted is Rav Menachem Rav Yossi is the Tana of that braisa. Then we said in the Mishnah, the next Malachas, we said building or tearing down, extinguishing a fire or lighting it, and we said Makabapatish is the 38th Malacha. So what is Makabapatish? Rabbi Rav Zera, the Amitabayu. So Rabbi and Rav Zera both say, Kol Midi the Ispeg Gmar Malacha, whenever you're doing the last thing that makes something ready for use, Chayev Mishra Makabapatish, then you Chayev for Makabapatish. So we just had, I skipped several lines of the Gemara. I didn't even realize it. I wish you guys had pointed it out to me. All right, let's go back and learn those. Sorry. We said before, that if a person finishes off a stone, I'm a sakas as Evan, we said it's chayef for makabu patish. So again, Rashi had said that he smooths it out, and Tosfos has said he draws decorations on it. So in this connection, Amr of Shimon ben Kisma, Amr of Shimon ben Lakish, Hatsur Sura Bekli, if a person draws a figure, a decoration on a keli, v'amarapeach b'klei tzuchis, or if a person blows glass, then also chayev mishum makom patish. Then in those cases, also he's chayev from makom patish because again he makes the keli now ready for use. In the case of the keli now by drawing a decoration on it, now he makes. In other words, before it wasn't, it could have been used without the decoration, of course, but it's the kind of keli that usually is decorated. So therefore, it's makom patish when he's doing that last thing to make it ready to use. And blowing glass, he'd be chayev again from makom patish because now he's making the keli usable. He's making the keli usable again. Rashi had said previously that the Gemara says a binyan b'kelim, and he says that applies over here also. Therefore, he's not chayev for the malacha of boina. Tosfos over there says that if you're making a whole new keli, you actually are chayev for boina. So one possibility is Tosfos would say he is actually chayev here for boina as well. Another possibility is they would say that not, because when you're blowing glass, you start off with something that already has a cavity in it, like you're blowing into that cavity and making it bigger. So in that sense, there was a keli already, you're just making it bigger now. Anyway, but you're definitely chayev for makom patish because you're making the keli ready for use. Okay, then we had again Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Haiman de Shokel Akufin Yeglimi, when you're taking off the little bits off clothing, the little hanging threads or the pills or the things that were sewn in, then Chayev Mishra Makom Patish, Mahanim Yehuda Tekapit Alayu, only if he's makom on them. So those are all examples of makom patish
So again, we're saying now, going back to where we were before, that Rabbah and Rav Zeira both say the general rule is whenever you're doing something that is finishing off something and making it ready for use, then you're chayav from makom hakadosh. I mentioned when we were learning the Mishnah that the Yerushalmi says that Rabbi Yochanan and Rish Lakish spent 3.5 years analyzing all the malachas and figuring out for each one 39 toldos, and then they said anything that we find on Shabbat that's also daraisa that doesn't fit under one of the other ones fits under makom hakadosh.
Okay.
We said Eilu Ovis Malachas. The Mishnah finishes off. These are the Ovis Malachas. So what does it mean? Why do we need those words in the Mishnah? It means Eilu Laf Huki Midrabali Ezer the Machayev Al Tur the Mamakam Ab. The word Eilu over here is coming to exclude, to tell us not like Rabbi Yezer, who says that you would be Chayev for a Toda where you do it along with an owl. Meaning, now like this, we've been saying that we said in the first Mishnah of our Perek, and we've been mentioning the idea that if a person were to do on Shabbos various toldos of one av or one av and a tolda of it or whatever, then he'd only be chai of one chabbos. So to take, for example, let's say that smoothing out of a dressing on a wound is chai of mishum b'machek, we said. So let's say a person were to actually be smoothing out a skin of an animal to make leather out of it, and smoothing out a dressing on a wound. So then he'd only be chayv one chatas because both of them are under the because they're the av and tulda respectively of memachet. Rabbi Yezer would say that not. Rabbi Yezer would say that you have to count each one individually, and he's chayv a separate chatas for each one. So by the Mishnah saying elu means not like Rabbi Yezer, only these and only these you chayev for and the various and each one has its tulbas, but not that you chayev separately for the av and its tulba. And then when it says chaser achas, we said the total number of malachas is 39, 40 minus 1. So why do we need to say that again? We already said at the beginning of the Mishnah 39. So the La Pukim is Rabbi Yehuda. The Mishnah wants to tell us not like Rabbi Yehuda who add two more of his malachas. Namely, the Tanya, we learn in a Braisa, Rabbi Yehuda Mosif as a Shoivet Ramadatis. Rabbi Yehuda adds two more malachas that have to do with weaving. Shoivet, which is where Shoivet comes from the word Shoivet, which means a stick. It means that you're evening out the Shefi threads using a stick. Meaning though, like this, you have the Shefi threads are set up in the loom. They're all in their respective loops. In their frames, ready to be raised and lowered, so you can do the weaving. But you have part of the process of that is that you have to make sure that they're all parallel, that none of them are tangled into each other. All of them are lined straight and parallel. So therefore, so you use a stick to separate any places where they're tangled together or whatever, and to get them to lie straight. The Rambam explains it a little bit differently. He says you use the stick to bang on the strings and on the threads and make them and that detangles them and gets them to lie straight. Whatever. Rabbi Yehuda counts that as a separate av malacha. And also the hamadaktis is where you're doing similarly with the Erev thread. So Rashi describes when you're stretching out the Erev thread and you're going to put it in, you're going to make the next row of the cloth. You're going to make the next row of the cloth. So now the problem is if the eight of thread is too tight, it's too stretched out, then when you put it in, when you weave it for the next row of the cloth, it's not going to attach well. It's not going to go well with the rest of the cloth that you already wove, which is not woven quite so tightly. So again, what you do is you take the same stick and you bang on it in a few different places in order to make it not quite so tight. So that's called medactic. Another meaning of medactic, some of the Mephoshim say, means you take like a sort of comb-shaped thing and use it to press the newly woven eight of threads into place. So therefore, so he counts those as separate avos malachas. Amrulai, the Chacham and Teitim, those are not separate avos malachas. Shoivet harei b'chlam meisach, the first one where you're making sure that all the shefi threads lie parallel, that's part of the malacha of meisach, of setting up the loom.
And the second one, where you're making sure that the Erev thread is not too tight, where you're pressing it against the rest of the woven cloth, that's part of the malacha of Oreg, that's part of the malacha of weaving, and therefore those don't count as separate malachas of their own. So our Mishnah wants to tell us therefore, that there's only 39, not like Rabbi Yehuda would say then that there were 41. So Rashi explains, now what about, for example, Zora, Bora, and Merakid? We said there are three malachas that have to do with removing psoilus from the food. The reason why those are counted as separate malachas is because those take place in different stages of the processing. One is when the grain is still inside its shells, one is when it's mixed with dirt, one is when it's already been ground into flour. So therefore, those can count as three separate of its malachas because all of them were done in the Mishkan. As opposed to over here, you set up the threads in the loom, and right then, after you set them up, before you even start weaving, or during the process of the weaving or whatever, you bang on them with a stick, or you separate them with a stick. So therefore, it's not really a separate process. And the same thing with the Erev thread, when you're going back and forth with it, When you use the stick to hit it, or use the comb to press it in place or whatever, that's all done during the process of weaving itself. So they can't be considered as separate of its malachas. So therefore, so the Chachamim are saying that's it. You only have 39. I forgot to mention, by the way, one thing at the bottom of Amud Aleph. When we were discussing the question of shechet b'shamay chayev, we were saying, what's the ground when a person shechts an animal on Shabbos? What exactly is he chayev on? We said, is it netilas neshama or is it seveya? There's a vote from the Baal Shem Tov on it. There's a vote from the Baal Shem Tov. A deeper meaning of it is the question is, we know that Hashem gave the Yetzahara a job to try to convince us to do Averus. On the other hand, it says that la'asid lover, when Mashiach comes, that should be the behavior of Yemenu Mamash, that Hashem will take the Yetzirah and shecht it. So the question is, so why is he chayav shechita? What did he do wrong if he was only doing his job? The one answer is Mishum Natilas Neshama, because that's what when he's convincing a person to do Averus, he's causing you to lose your Neshama. Therefore, okay, maybe that was his job, but nevertheless, he's held responsible for the fact that he actually was successful and actually got you and actually got a person to lose their neshama. That's one explanation. And the other explanation is, fine, you can't be mechayev him necessarily because of that, but you can be mechayev him because of seveya. Because seveya also means to be a hypocrite, because the word seveya is like dyeing a cloth, like making it a different color than it was. He's hypocritical and pretends to be a yetzer tov. So the Gemara is saying why is he chayev? Not just because of the tilas neshama, but also because he accomplished it in a way of seveya, in a way of tricking you and making you think that he's actually a yetzer tov.
Okay. So
we'll stop over here and we'll do the next Mishnah tomorrow, Beis Hashem.
Shkayach.